Brandon Darby made a name for himself as a radical activist influenced by the Black Panthers and anarchist philosophy. He co-founded a collective called Common Ground that brought aid to New Orleans' Ninth Ward after Hurricane Katrina. So it surprised those who knew him when, just a few years later, it was revealed that he'd later become an FBI informant. He's featured in a new documentary from Jimmy Meltzer called Informant, and I'm very pleased to welcome both Jimmy Meltzer and Brandon Darby to our show today. Hello.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Brandon, this film doesn't always paint you in the most flattering light. Why did you agree to participate?
Well, it really doesn't paint me in a very flattering light, but I think it's an honest film. You know, I think that my story is one where people can see it a number of different ways. And, you know, when I was younger, I remember there was this film that the dictator in the Philippines, Marcos, he made this film about himself. And I remember thinking just how disgusting it was. It was just this pure, favorable film that he wanted to make to promote himself. And so I thought it was more interesting to do a film that would be more critical than it would be to do one that was more favorable. And that's why I agreed to do it with Jamie. He was honest, but he doesn't necessarily agree with me.
So. Well, there's another film on the subject, and there have been people have written about it. Did you feel that you'd been misrepresented in those accounts?
I think so. I think that the other film, I mean, it, you know, like this film, Jamie's film opens up with me saying that if I'd had an appropriate weapon to attack my government, I would have done so, and in a archival footage. And that was said in a very specific set of circumstances. It was in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, and when a number of New Orleans police officers worked with a white racist militia, and they actually killed unarmed black people and burned their bodies, and now they're incarcerated for it. So it's proven that they did that. And that's what that was said in response to. So the other film actually represented it as though it was something I was saying at the RNC or that I was saying to David McKay and Brad Crowder. And I think Jamie's film put it in proper context.
Jamie, was it challenging for you to piece together a story in which the people directly involved all seem to have different versions of what happened?
Yeah, but that was the draw of the film, of making the film, was here's this journey that Brandon Darby goes on that people have really differing, opposing opinions on and perspectives on. And I saw the film as a way to kind of open up a space of dialogue where the viewer can see these differing opinions, where they can be juxtaposed against each other, and the audience can make up their own minds. Those are the kinds of documentaries that I enjoy watching, and those are the ones I want to make.
Well, you have a combination of a lot of footage from the time and some reenactments, and you kind of merge the two. But where did you get all that footage?
Well,
Was this a story that was covered by other photographers?
Well, there were a lot of activists and photographers and filmmakers down at Common Ground in 2005, 2006. Of course, I contacted as many people as I could find, looked for as much footage as I could find, and tried to incorporate it. But there hadn't been a story, the Common Ground story hadn't been told. And it's a pretty remarkable story of activists kind of making a space and doing relief without the help of government.
Well, many of the people who knew Brandon then have changed their opinions about him since. Were any of them reluctant to speak to you?
Every single person in the film. I mean, this is one of the challenges of making this film. And, you know, and Brandon and I, you know, went back and forth for months, and every other person in the film, you know, had their beefs about being in the film and how they were going to be represented. And I was just always honest, saying, look, I'm here. I don't have an ideological axe to grind. I'm here to hear your perspective, and it will be represented as well as will opposing perspectives.
The film begins, Brandon, with you deciding to go to New Orleans right after Katrina to look for your friend Robert King Wilkerson. Who was he?
Robert King Wilkerson is a former Black Panther Party member who's held in high esteem in further left of center circles. And he was someone who was a mentor to me as a young activist. But unfortunately, he and I are no longer friends. It's covered in the film, but he's not happy with my decisions to work with the FBI.
It's unclear whether you considered yourself an anarchist at the time.
You know, I've always, when I look back in hindsight, I always assumed, you know, I was a runaway. I obviously had a very strong desire to do things that I thought helped others. which sometimes people, a lot of folks don't agree with my methods. But I assumed at the time that because I was very radical about helping people in need, that that meant, you know, the only people I saw who were really radical about helping people in need were the far left. They're the ones who are the most intense have the most intense activism. But what I found in Katrina, and through actually working with them on the ground on a project like that, where so many human beings were dependent on all of our efforts, is that I really didn't agree with their methodology a lot. And so we were in solidarity about how radical we were to help others, but that's about the extent of it.
Well, as a result, some of the people you worked with now believe that you were working for the FBI during your time with Common Ground. When did your relationship with the FBI actually begin?
You know, as talked about in numerous trials and under oath from me and the FBI, I began to work with them in November of 2007, about 2 years after, 2.5 years after Katrina. I think some of the real further elements of the far left say, like, well, he was doing it the whole time. He was there to destroy the movement. But I helped co-found the movement. So I obviously wasn't there to destroy the movement, you know.
Well, the FBI did send people into all sorts of groups, and they would get involved, and everybody assumed that they were really committed to their cause. And then it turned out later that they were also working for the FBI. There are two stories that can be seen as rather confusing in your retelling of events: your visit to Venezuela and your relationship with a man named Riyad Hamad. We don't have a lot of time, but can you give us the short version?
Yeah. Venezuela, it was a kind of a transitional time in my life. It was the first time I had really left post-Katrina New Orleans. And I was invited by the government there, to receive funds from Hugo Chavez, from the revolutionary process there. And when I got there, I began to not like some of the things that I saw. And it was just by the time I got back from Venezuela, to keep it short, I felt very differently about a lot of things. And I saw some of the people that I worked with very differently. And as far as Riyad Hamad, that was actually the case where I first went to the FBI. He ran the Palestinian Children's Welfare Fund. And he had approached me about helping him send money, get money to Israel for Palestinians who were going to commit suicide bombings. And so I turned him into the FBI. That was my first relationship with them.
And what happened to him? Was his death definitely a suicide?
Yeah, his death definitely was a suicide. There's video of it, actually, sadly. There's video from a traffic cam that caught him doing it. So what he did was, when he realized, because he didn't just take money to give to Israel. He also was found to have taken several $100,000 from the nonprofit to benefit for his own bills and his own way of life. And so he knew he was in trouble. So what he did was he taped himself up in a haphazard way and jumped in a lake and killed himself. There's video of it, but it was kind of like a final middle finger to the FBI, I guess, or to the U.S. government. It created controversy. But then the video is there, so he did it to himself.
Well, I guess our Brandon Darby, who's the subject of a new film by Jamie Meltzer called Informant. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. So your FBI handler in the Hamad story became your friend? Is that what prompted you to do further work for the FBI?
Not necessarily. When I went to the FBI about Riyad Hamad, I did so because I felt like it was the right thing to do, and I felt like it would protect life, and I thought it was the right thing to do. I didn't necessarily want to do it. I was, you know, you're right. The FBI historically has had a tendency to infiltrate groups, and in their defense, to extent, many of those groups are armed groups or related to armed groups, but they have had in the 60s and 70s, there was a pretty bad history there with civil rights abuses and so forth. And so I wasn't very happy to work with the FBI, but I felt like I should, and I continued to do it because I felt like I should.
And in 2008, Jamie, Brandon was assigned to go undercover with a group that called itself the RNC Welcome Committee. Who were they?
Well, that was a group of activists who basically tried to get people from across the country to come in and protest and disrupt the Republican National Convention. But a lot of their rhetoric and their imagery was kind of inflammatory. And so they kind of attracted the attention of law enforcement. And Brandon was one of several informants that were sent with groups that went to the RNC. The group that Brandon went with, obviously, they ended up building Molotov cocktails. And, you know, that's sort of where the story centers around.
Well, there's a lot of debate in the film about Brandon and the FBI's role as possible agent provocateur is in encouraging the group to make the Molotov cocktails, the act that led to the leader's arrests. Can you speak a bit about that?
Well, just from my perspective, you know, again, I was really trying to open up dialogue about this. I mean, I think that's an allegation that's made. And there's an allegation that just by putting Brandon in with these activists, putting this older activist in, I think Brandon was about 30 at the time and the activists were about 20, 22. Putting him in, they claimed, was an influence on them, a bad influence. But at the end of the day, I think what the film shows, and even what the previous film showed, was that David McKay and Brad Crowder, who built the Molotov cocktails, did so on their own. And ultimately, that was what they were charged with, was building Molotov cocktails.
And they're now in prison.
No, they're both actually out. One of them, Brad, pled guilty and spent 2 years in prison. And then the other one went to trial, and that's where he told the lie that Brandon had told him to build Molotov cocktails. He was found in contempt of court, and you know, he was sentenced to 4 years.
Brandon, were you aware of the fact that they were planning to make Molotov cocktails?
No, I wasn't aware of it. I was actually done with my assignment, but no offense to Jamie, but I categorically reject the description of the RNC welcoming committee that was given. We're not talking, you know, 10,000 people went there to protest the Republican National Convention, and that's awesome that they did so.
This is Minneapolis?
In Minneapolis, but the 1 to 2,000 people who went with the RNC welcoming committee, they went with the explicit stated goal to shut it down by any means necessary, and that's not a protest movement. That's not an acceptable thing in this country, I don't think.
How was your cover blown?
Well, my cover was blown when David McKay didn't, you know, he wanted to take it to trial. And so the only option that was left was for my identity to come out or the charges to get dropped.
And you've received many death threats since you were revealed to be an FBI informant. Why didn't you take the FBI up on its offer to put you in the witness protection program? I mean, you're in this film now. Anyone who sees it will recognize you.
Well, I'm well known at this point, and I think I've tried to make lemonade from those lemons, and I think I've used that to try to further my goals as an activist. You know, like I try to help people still, and I think that I'm in a position to actually have a lot more effect and positive change within the FBI than I was prior, when I hated the FBI or when I thought they were my enemy. As far as going into witness protection, I kind of looked at it and I said, you know, I didn't do anything wrong. I think I did the right thing. I know that half the country, it seems, doesn't, and half the country does. But I think I did the right thing, and why would I run like a person who did something wrong?
Well, in the final scenes of the film, you're seen sleeping with a gun, and people call you as soon as the alarm system in your home goes off. So that's got to be a rather tense situation for you.
Extremely tense. That, you know, that was at a time, though. That was a specific time. But, you know, I've gone on now where, as a journalist, I write and I investigate cartels in Mexico and their involvement in our southern states. So I you know, it's one of those things where there's just sometimes you can do things that make people mad at you, but you can't run away from them.
Well, Jamie, in a surprising twist, Brandon now makes money speaking at Tea Party lectures and blogging for the late conservative commentator Andrew Breitbart's site. Did you speak to many people on the conservative, on the political right?
Well, we spoke to Andrew Breitbart, and he's featured in the film. At the time that I made, that was kind of the final transformation or twist to this whole story. And it's just one of the interesting things about being a documentary filmmaker. You have no idea where the story is going to take you. And I think, you know, as I was making it, I think Brandon was questioning his, you know, he had already broken with the left at that point. They were already extremely upset with him. He was receiving death threats and such. And he had some support from the right. You know, and so it did surprise me that he was talking at Tea Party events and such. But on the one hand, I think the film brings up that these two groups, the radical left and the Tea Party groups on the right, do have some commonalities. And some of the rhetoric I see has some commonalities in terms of being against government interference and things like that. Of course, they're totally different groups. I'm not suggesting that, but I think it does bring up some interesting political points to kind of be able to compare and contrast the philosophies.
Brandon, are you a political conservative now? If someone had told you back in 2005 that one day you'd be a well-known Tea Party speaker, what would you have said?
I wouldn't have believed them at all, you know, not at all. You know, the thing is that what I've learned is I think people on both sides of the spectrum, generally most human beings want to help people. And I think that people have different solutions, you know, and I think that on the far left, they tend to believe in more community-based solutions, and they feel that the federal government being involved on the very far left, that the federal government being involved can sometimes prevent local leadership of how people are helped and how aid is distributed, right? And I think that, you know, like I talk at tea parties, but generally what I talk about is I talk about the need for communities to take control over how they help people in their own areas. So when I was younger, I wouldn't have seen that. But as I've gotten older, it makes perfect sense to me.
Is that the big issue you think is facing this country today, the one that you wish would be tackled?
I think the biggest issue for me when it comes to what the country's facing, I actually really can't say that. But I can say that one of the biggest issues is in how we distribute aid to people, how we help people. I think there's a tendency, a growing tendency for us to kind of not help people and to depend on government to do it. But then at the same time, I think, you know, there's some issues with that too. Like it's more comfortable to depend on government to help people than to try to take initiative yourself or in your own community.
Now, Jamie, this film has been compared to Fog of War, where Robert McNamara talked about his role in the U.S. involvement in Vietnam. Was that an inspiration for you? Was that something you were thinking about when you're making this?
Yeah, and not explicitly, or, you know, it wasn't something I intended to have people say about it necessarily, but I think what they have in common is that both films are largely told from the perspective, or from a sort of first-person perspective. And to me, again, that's interesting because as an audience member, you're not told what to think about it. You're getting someone's perspective, and in my film, you're getting a wide range of perspectives, some opposing. And you, as an audience member, have to make up your mind. And that's something I appreciate in Fog of War, and then it's something that I think is common with Informant.
And Informant opens tomorrow at Lincoln Center. You can also get it. It's available on demand. And my great thanks to Jamie Meltzer, who made the film, and Brandon Darby, who is its subject, for being on our show today. It's
been
a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.